Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of Spirit, Apostolic Secretary, Congregation of the Spirit, in the Oregon, Texas. We're going to continue our study on the Desire of Ages, chapter 77. This is page 730, the Desire of Ages, and we're on the first paragraph. It says part number two of Apollos Judgment Hall. It says Herod's conscience is now far less sensitive than when he had trembled with horror at the request of the Herodias for the head of John the Baptist. For a time, he had felt the keen sting of the remorse for his terrible act, but his moral perception had become more and more degraded by his licentious life. Now his heart had become so hardened that he could even boast of the punishment he had inflicted upon John for daring to reprove him, and he now threatened to assure his parents repeatedly that he had power to release or to condemn him. But no sign from the usher gave evidence that he heard a word. Herod was irritated by his silence. This seemed to indicate utter indifference to his authority and to the vain and pompous king of open rebuke would have been less offensive than to be thus ignored again. He angrily threatened Ashur, who still remained unmoved and silent. For the mission of the Ashur in this world was not to gratify idle curiosity. He came to heal the brokenhearted. Could he have spoken any word for the healing of the bruises of sin's sick soul, he would not have kept silent. But he had no words for those who would but trample the truth under their unholy feet. For the Asher might have spoken words unto her that would have pierced the ears of the hardened king. He might have stricken him with the fear and trembling of the land before him the full iniquity of his life and the horror of his approaching doom. But the Yahshua's silence was the severest rebuke that he could have given, for the Herod had rejected the truth spoken unto him by the greatest of the prophets, and no other message was he to receive. Not a word had the majesty of the heaven for him. That ear that had ever been opened unto the human woe had no room for the Herod's command. Those eyes that had ever rested upon the penitent sinner and the pitying, forgiving love had no look to bestow upon the Herod. Those lips that had uttered the most impressive truth that in the tones of the tenderest entreaty had pleaded with the most sinful and the most degraded were closed to the haughty king who felt no need of a savior. Let his face be dark with the passion. Turning unto the multitude, he angrily denounced Asher as an impostor. Then unto Asher he said, if you will give no evidence of your claim, I will deliver you up to the soldiers and the people. They may succeed in making you speak. If you are an impostor, death at their hands is only what you merit. If you are the son of Yahweh, save yourself by the working of a miracle. No sooner were these words spoken than a rush was made for the Yahshua, like a wild beast, for the crowd darted upon their prey. Yahshua was dragged this way and that, Herod joining the mob and is seeking to humiliate the son of Yahweh. Had not the Roman soldiers interposed and forced back the maddened throng, the Savior would have been torn in pieces. For the Herod, with his men of war, set him at naught and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe. Well, the Roman soldiers joined in this abuse. All that these wicked, corrupt soldiers helped on by the Herod and the Jewish dignitaries could instigate was heaped upon the Savior, yet his divine patience failed not. For the Yahshua's persecutors had tried to measure his character by their own, for they had represented him as vile as themselves, but back of all, the present appearance, another scene intruded itself, a scene which they will one day see in all its glory. There were some who trembled in the Yahshua's presence, while the rude throng were bawling, were howling in a mockery. Before him, some who came forward for that purpose turned back, afraid and silent. Herod was convicted. For the last rays of a merciful light was shining upon his sin-hardened heart. He thought that this was no common man, for the divinity had flashed through the humanity. At the very time when the Yahshua was encompassed by the mouth of adulterers and murderers, Herod felt that he was beholding a Yahweh upon his throne, or he was beholding a king, or God, as he would call it, upon his throne. For hardened as he was, Herod did not ratify the condemnation of the Asher. He wished to relieve himself of the terrible responsibility, and he sent Asher back into the Roman judgment hall. Pilate was disappointed and much displeased when the Jews returned with their prisoner. He asked impatiently what they would have him to do. he reminded them that he had already examined Yahshua and found no fault in him. He told them that they had brought complaints against him, but they had not been able to prove a single charge. We had sent Yahshua to Herod, the tetrarch of Galilee, and one of their own nation, but he also had found in him nothing worthy of death. I will therefore chastise him, Pilate said, and release him. Here Pilate showed his weakness. He had declared that Yahshua was innocent, yet he was willing for him to be scourged to pacify his accusers. He would sacrifice justice and principle in order for the compromising with the mob. For this placed him at a disadvantage, for the crowd presumed upon his indecision and clamored the more for the life of the prisoner. If at the first Pilate had stood firm, refusing to condemn a man whom he found guiltless, he would have broken the fatal chain that was to bind him in the remorse and guilt as long as he lived. Had he carried out his convictions of the right, the Jews would not have presumed to dictate unto him. Yahshua would have been put to death, but the guilt would not have rested upon Pilate. But Pilate had taken step after step in the violation of his conscience. He had excused himself from the judging with the justice and equity, and he now found himself almost helpless in the hands of the priests and rulers. His wavering and decision proved his ruin. Even now, Pilate was not left to act blindly. A message from the Yahweh warned him from the deed he was about to commit. And the answer to the Yahshua's prayer, the wife of the prophet has been visited by an angel from the heaven, and in a dream she had beheld the Savior and conversed with him. For the prophet's wife was not a Jew, but as she looked upon Yahshua in her dream, she had no doubt of his character or mission. She knew him to be the Prince of Yahweh. She saw him on the trial in the judgment hall. She saw the hands tightly bound as the hands of a criminal. She saw Herod and his soldiers doing their dreadful work. She heard the priests and the rulers filled with the envy and malice, madly accusing. She heard the word, "We have a law, and by our law it ought to be," she said, "Pilate, give Yahshua to the scourging after he had declared, I find no fault in him." She heard the condemnation pronounced by the pilot and saw him give Yahshua up unto his murderers. She saw the cross uplifted on Calvary. She saw the earth wrapped in the darkness, and heard the mysterious cry, "It is finished." Still another sin met her gaze. She saw Yahshua seated upon their great white cloud, while the earth reeled in space, and his mother fled from the presence of his glory. With a cry of horror, she awoke and at once wrote to Pilate words of warning. While Pilate was hesitating as to what he should do, a messenger pressed through the crowd and handed him the letter from his wife, which read, "Have thou nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things this day and a dream because of him." Pilate's face grew pale. He was confused by his own conflicting emotions. But while he had been delayed to act the priest and ruler, just still further inflaming the minds of the people, Pilate was forced to action. He now bethought himself of a custom which might serve to secure Yahshua's release. He was customary at the feast to release one prisoner whom the people might choose. This custom was of the pagan invention. There was not a shadow of the justice in it, but it was greatly prized by the Jews, for the Roman authorities at this time held a prisoner named Barabbas, who was under the sentence of death. This man had claimed to be the Messiah, for he claimed authority for the establishment of a different order of the thing, for the setting the world right. Under the satanic delusion, he claimed that whatever he should obtain by the theft and robbery was his own, for he had done wonderful things through the satanic agency. He had gained a following among the people and had excited sedition against the Roman government. Under the cover of the religious enthusiasm, he was a hardened and desperate villain, bent on rebellion and cruelty by the giving the people a choice between this man and the innocent Savior, for the Pilate sought to arouse them into a sense of the justice. He hoped to gain their sympathy for Yahshua and the opposition to the priests and rulers. So turning to the crowd, he said with a great eagerness, "Whom will you that I release unto you?" "Barabbas," or Yahshua, which is called Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. Like the bellowing of the wild beast came the answer of the mob, "Release unto us Barabbas." Louder and louder swirled the cry. Barabbas, Barabbas, thinking that the people had not understood his question, thought of that, "Will you that I release unto you the King of the Jews?" But they cried out again, "Away with this man, and release unto us the rabbit." What shall I do then with Yashir, which is called Yashir? Pilate asked. Again, the surging multitude roared like the demons. The demons themselves in the human form were in the crowd, and what could be expected but the answer? Let him be crucified. For the Pilate was troubled. He had not thought it would come to that. He shrank from the delivering of an innocent man to the most ignominious and cruel death that could be inflicted after the roar of the voices had ceased. He turned unto the people and said, "Why, what evil hath he done?" But the case had gone too far for the argument. It was not evident of the Yashir innocence that they wanted, but his condemnation. Still Pilate endeavored to save himself. He said unto them the third time, "Why, what evil hath he done? I have found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go." But the very mention of his release stirred the people to a tenfold frenzy. "Crucify him! Crucify him!" they cried louder and louder. Swell the storm that the palace indecision had called forth.